You're listening to the Sun Microsystems Podcast Network. Welcome to another edition of Innovating at Sun with your host, Hal Stern. Today's topic, SunGrid and Network.com. And now, here's Hal Stern.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Innovating at Sun. I'm your host, Hal Stern, Vice President of Global Systems Engineering at Sun. My guest today is Sun Microsystems Vice President of Collaborative and ISV Engineering, Jim Parkinson, former field guy himself. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Al.
So you've been working on the grid and on network.com for a while, and I think the question everybody asks me is, okay, what can I go do with it? So I understand we've made it a little bit more useful.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've really focused on is we started working with customers and we wanted to understand what customers wanted to do with it. So we kept the feature set reasonably small so we could understand what customers want to do. And the new release that comes out on March the 13th, I think is the first version that really gets the users real power so they can really take advantage of the power of SunGrid.
Great. And, you know, you talk a little bit more about some of the applications we're making available and how we're essentially packaging up the grid at a higher level for customers.
So one of the things that we spent a lot of time on in this release especially is making applications available, because it's one of the big problems that people have with grid computing, let alone network computing, in a utility space, is how do I get applications? So we've really taken two tacks. The first tack is to go out and work with ISVs and bring those ISVs onto SunGrid. One of the examples of that is a company called eHITS out of Canada. Really exciting application. They're able to do jobs now that are 100 times more complex than they were ever able to do before. So we're really excited about them coming on board. We've also brought in a number of open source applications. We've gone and joined some communities, and we're working with about 50 to 100 different communities. We'll debut about 20 open source apps in this next release, things like Spice and FASTA and Blast and Glimmer and applications like that. A lot of the applications and a lot of stuff you'll see is focused in the life sciences area, because that's where we've seen the majority of the activity so far. We're also adding to the catalog the ability to do things like digital tokens so that people can use X509 certificates to manage their software and be able to protect their software, as well as the ability to access applications external to the grid via a capability we call bidirectional, which we'll see towards the end of the month.
So say a little bit more about that. So how are we making it easier for people to get their data onto the grid and eventually communicate with things they have running on our grid?
Yeah, so this is one of the things that we really felt was a key capability that we needed to add to the system, was that a user be able to open a port and be able to either talk to a website, talk to a database, without having to physically move all the data up to the grid. Because one of the problems that we saw was just, you know, no matter how fast the pipes are, no matter how big they are, it takes too much time to move data around and also put the results back. So we created the ability for a SunGrid job using the SunGrid engine to be able to open up a port to the external world and then be able to write, read, and write from that port. And again, that'll be a beta capability that'll be out towards the end of the month. The other thing that we've added to that is the ability to use an API. So we'll create the first beta API for network.com that will be available again, you know, towards the end of the month, early April, so that people can start to programmatically access the grid without having to use the portal.
And we've talked for a while, I think, about how you get all the data onto the grid and how you make it interesting. And if your data is stored in an application that you've licensed and you know how to get the data in and out, you don't want to have to go move everything and relicense it. So this capability gives you the mechanism to go pull your data out of one of your data-protected environments and do your compute somewhere else.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's what we're trying to do, is make it simpler for people to access their data and access their applications, and also do application linking, because a lot of applications aren't necessarily grid-aware, or they run in a more protected environment, but they need to be able to reach out to a grid to do a piece of the processing. So this will allow us to do program-to-program type communications as well.
Well, I think we've talked about, you know, the network is a computer and making the network much more transparent, and this capability of moving your data back and forth to your grid-hosted application certainly does that. It really makes you a lot less sensitive, I think, to where all your CPUs are. You're still going to be sensitive to where your data is, but less sensitive to where your CPUs are.
Exactly, yep.
So tell me, you talked about this one particular customer, EHITS, that's using network.com essentially for short-term grid boosting, I would say. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so what's interesting about EHITS, and EHITS is actually the real typical kind of ISV that we believe is going to be quite successful in the utility space. They're a small company. They're very focused in the life sciences spaces. They're out of Canada. And their customers typically don't have large grids and don't use large grids every single day. But when they need one, they need one. And so the jobs that they've been able to solve have been very small jobs. Now by using network.com, what's happening is they're able to go out and attack much bigger jobs. The casual user is now able to use their software, and it's really opening up a whole new market for them and a whole new environment for them in the computational chemistry area.
Great. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, you go and you get something running on the grid, and it's tooling along for a while, and you want to kind of go back and check up on it. I mean, how do you keep track of long-running processes or long-lived applications on the grid?
So one of the capabilities that we'll introduce again in the later release in the month is with bidirectional, you're able to then have what we call a long-running job. And so the long-running job, basically you start the job up and it goes to sleep until it's woken up outside the grid. So if I have a port that I've opened up within the program, and then, say, a web browser or somebody sends the process data, the process then wakes up. The cool part about that is we don't charge for the process when it's in dormant. It just basically sits on the grid and waits until it gets to be activated by outside the grid. So one of the things this will open the door to is a lot of applications that need compute on demand but don't have, you know, grids or don't have the ability to have this kind of remote compute capability. They'll be able to stop and start their jobs interactively without having to log on to the grid or even pay attention to the grid. They'll just have to pay the bill, you know, once a month or once a week, depending on when their jobs start and stop.
You really are driving toward that next phase, the next wave of network transparency.
Yep, exactly. I mean, the goal with network.com was always, you know, we started out with a portal just to get people used to the idea of utility computing, but the whole idea has always been to provide the ability to connect to transparent functionality across the network, and this really allows us to start to go down that path. We've got a lot more to learn about it, but we think it's a pretty interesting way to start, you know, to solve some pretty interesting compute problems.
And if you go back 15 or 20 years, we used to have the Catalyst catalog, which was mm-hmm. a big softbound book that showed every application that was running on top of SunOS and later on Solaris, optimized for our platform and available. So it was a way to raise awareness. And I think some of that notion of dropping off the big book has been replaced with people finding things on the network. By you hosting applications now in network.com, is this what Catalyst is going to turn into, which is a set of ported, optimized, and hosted applications that anybody can come and kick the tires on.
Exactly. I mean, this is the part that I'm actually really excited about, is it even goes the next step. So we've created some other services, which we call EasyQual and Connected Developer, which allows a developer to log on and create applications and test those applications. We've even created a grid simulator where the developer can test their applications before they put them onto SunGrid. Once they've built the application, they've tested it, they've got it working, they're ready to go, any user can publish an application in the SunGrid catalog and talk about, you know, their application, how you use it, how you get access to it, the licensing mechanisms, and so forth. And so I, as a member of the network.com community, can log in and see all these applications, pick the ones I want to be able to use, and go to work. If you think about it, it's a lot simpler than having to, you know, load the application, get it started, all those things. So we want to build on the Catalyst concept, but make it open to the community so anybody could post an application that they want to share or that others want to use. So it's not just Sun that's able to post applications. It's the entire community that posts applications.
So what's next? I mean, certainly you've gone from talking about the grid in very generic terms, a dollar per CPU hour and a big mess of computers on the net, to now making it much more developer-focused and much more focused on finding the kinds of applications that lend themselves toward this compute on demand or compute over the wire. Where do you see this going next?
So I think, you know, this is an interesting. I really think when you start to look at it, and spending a lot of time with my counterparts in the software team, and we're talking about this, is this could be an interesting mashup engine at some point where lots of people are contributing lots of applications, and I'm able to sit there and do assembly of applications and put things together and hook them up to different databases and things like that. So I really think one of the things that we're going to see with, you know, this entire environment is it's going to become more developer-centric, and developers are going to be able to create, taking lots of different functions, being able to link them together and create applications. The other place we're going to go with Network.com is Network.com is also going to become a backbone for a lot of the software products. So one, for example, we're going to be offering for our SDN and our big admin users, we're going to be offering mail messaging and calendaring capability. We're going to be working with the Star Office team to offer some Star Office services as well that people will be able to connect to via plugins in the Star Office. So we're going to do a lot of things with our applications to allow them to take advantage of SunGrid almost transparently for the user.
And this really is, you talked about mashups before. The innovation here is by providing a set of network services, it's not, again, network.com, just CPUs, it's network.com, useful service endpoints.
Right.
Looking at high-performance computers as a starting point, because that's naturally what fits the large network of CPUs, but also then getting into things that benefit from the system administration model you're bringing to bear here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's the icing on the cake with SunGrid is, you know, we've learned to run this in a lights-out what I call, you know, network operation model as opposed to the data center model. And it really takes away a lot of the stuff for users. You know, my biggest goal, and I think Jonathan would agree with this, is I've got to keep the pricing, I've got to keep the contracts, I've got to keep all that stuff so that it's so simple that anybody can just use it. And all the administration, all the other stuff that goes on is pretty much transparent, and you don't really have to worry about that.
And then as we've looked at driving cost and complexity out, you know, some of these things that really are, I hesitate to call them pure overhead, but really benefit from an economy of scale will naturally fit this model. I mean, we're able to go drive down the cost point and the complexity point for people who just want to be able to go consume this. You know, just as you consume a Google Mail or a Yahoo user group, you're going to be able to go consume some of our hosted applications here as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of my, like, you know, Star Wars, you know, my way out vision is that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of network.coms living in all different kinds of service providers all around the world, and people are posting applications and posting functionality that then people can sit, you know, in their, you know, in the quiet of their office and develop applications by all these functions that live on the network and access data either in their data site or in other data sites or data sites that they buy. Then we get real scale of computing, and we spread it out. And I think, you know, we've always said, you know, I know the tie line to network is the computer, but I really think, you know, once we enable the developers to be able to post their applications, to be able to make their stuff available to thousands of people, whether it's for a charge or not, I think we start to move the state of the art, you know, quite a bit forward.
And that's really about driving adoption. The next set of people who are going to do something clever with Blast as a genetic edit distance software are going to do it because they have access to it, and we've lowered the barrier to entry for them to go try out some creative idea. They don't have to worry about building something at a big enough scale to go test out an idea. They simply have the services available to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all you have to do is go to India or China, and you can see that they're dying for this kind of capability. And that's one of the things that I guess I didn't mention that we're very close on, and I hope to be able to have international support announced by early May, which would be just, you know, really help us move the ball forward quite a bit faster, because there's, in a lot of these developing countries, there's a lot of good stuff going on, but they just don't have access to the kind of compute power they need to be able to do the kind of work they want to do. And I think, you know, this is one way we can do it. And you know, I should say, as, you know, at the bottom of all this that makes all this work, and that will continue, that we're counting on, is you know, Solaris as the host-based environment, being able to host this kind of compute power and manage this kind of compute power. You know, the Solaris environment really allows us to make this happen.
Great. Anything else you want to add, Jim?
No, just get an account on network.com. Come on in, try it, play around with it. We'll have the new release. It'll be out on the 13th, and then we'll be following the release with the what we call the bi-directional release, and then the API release, and then the internationalization will follow right behind it. We've got a lot of cool stuff planned. Log on, you know, get an account, and come play with it.
Great. Well, thank you. You've been listening to Jim Parkinson, Vice President of Collaborative and ISV Engineering at Sun. And this has been another edition of Innovating at Sun. I'm your host, Hal Stern.
You've been listening to Innovating at Sun. Join us next time for the latest in innovation from Sun Microsystems, only on the Sun Microsystems Podcast Network.